Nothing good is easy, as they used to say, and we're going to be talking about the value of property rights and individual property rights. I'm not talking about communalism. And whenever this topic comes up, I often think back to when former Mayor Norris, now City Councilor Norris, was giving his inaugural speech from the council dais as mayor after having been selected by his fellow travelers to be the mayor of this community. And he spent an inordinate amount of time talking about the commons. There wasn't a single reference to private property, and I don't think he really respects private property. But when he focused on the commons and this whole idea of us owning things in common as a community, in the commons this and the commons that, and I think the flip side of that is private property. So you can be in favor of one or the other. I don't really think you can have a strong position in favor of both of them, because I'm not even sure that all of these common spaces were something that was constitutionally intended. I want to get into all of this conversation today as we welcome back to the program David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management. We're talking about property rights of man or of God and why property rights are important to the future of this nation. And David Murata, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why did you choose this topic right now? Because I know that you're strategic in your choice of discussions, and it wasn't just a random selection.
It's interesting. A lot of people believe in economic freedom, mm-hmm. But they don't understand economics and they don't understand freedom. So it's difficult to talk about economic freedom with talking about some of the fundamental concepts of economic freedom. And the Heritage Foundation ranks every country in the world in 10 aspects of economic freedom. And the first and probably the most important is property rights. And so property rights follow gross domestic product per capita. So mm-hmm. it is directly correlated to our personal prosperity is dependent upon property rights within our country. And I thought it would be good to do a little bit of a series on property rights just to try to understand why certain government actions are so abhorrent to those who believe in liberty and yet so critical to our prosperity, because much of what we're doing in the country today is actually going to make the country as a whole personally less prosperous, even though it's trying to do the exact opposite. The unintended consequences of economics are just so devastating.
We're talking with David Murata. 977-1070 is the phone number. Property rights and their origin is the topic, their importance, and so forth. So I had mentioned earlier this concept of the commons, but I heard this once, and I never had really thought about it much before, but it had to do with national parks and all of this land that the federal government owns. And many people would look at this and say, gosh, you know, this is great. I love going to Yellowstone National Park, or I love going to the Grand Canyon, or I love going up to Skyline Drive. And yet I'm not sure that the founders would have been on board with any of this federal ownership of property.
Yeah, it to start with, property rights really starts with a fundamental definition of why we should have property rights, why mm-hmm. everything shouldn't be in common, why it shouldn't all be in common space. And it begins with the idea that you own yourself, that you're not a slave, that you're a free person, and that you are free to enjoy, therefore, the fruits of your labor. So your labor is what gives you property rights. Your labor is yours, and you get to enjoy the fruits of it. So, I mean, from the very earliest aspects of mankind, when a hunter picked up a stick and used a stone to sharpen it into a spear, it was his spear. He had put in the effort, and that spear became his property. A stick, which was common and anyone could have picked up, suddenly became a piece of property because it was invested with his labor and his effort. Similarly, if someone stopped at a plot of land and decided to settle there and plant the land and gather a herd, that land became their property. Land was plentiful, and so he having improved the land, it was his to enjoy the fruits of it. It makes sense. After the invention of currency, labor became a transferable. I could labor in one thing and transfer it to ownership of another by means of currency. And so that began the process of owning what we own, if you will. And the difficulty with most of government efforts is that they're trying to ride on the backs of other people's labor and profit from it. Mm-hmm. So the more taxation you have, the more of a slave you are and the less of a free person you are. So that's what the origin of property is.
You know, locally here, we have a a proposal called ACE, or Acquisition of Conservation Easements, which is basically people selling out their property rights to the government and promising, hey, I won't touch my land if you give me a tax break. That's always struck me as very problematic because you're making me pay for somebody else's private park.
Yeah, it's interesting the way that property rights can get very conflicted back and forth. And so I think it's good to have a philosophy of what kind of infringements upon personal property you would promote and which kinds you would discourage. So if you think about it, if you and I have a piece of property that is adjacent to one another, mm-hmm. if I blare loud music, it is actually infringing upon your property rights to enjoy your property in peace. So things like nuisance laws come into play not because my loudness is a problem, but only because my loudness impinges upon your right to enjoy your property. So there are some laws which are okay. They're good because a nuisance law actually protects your private property. It doesn't just curtail my enjoyment of my property because my enjoyment of my property is affecting you. So it's not that all the nuisance laws are ridiculous and you can do anything on your property. You can do anything on your property so long as it's not impinging upon another person's property rights. And I think that's the right place to sort of get at appropriate easements versus inappropriate easements. So if I have a piece of land and it's a swamp and I need to drain my land, I might need an easement between two pieces of property in order to get the drainage out. On the other hand, if I have an arid piece of land and I need water, I might need an easement to get water onto my land. It's actually protecting my right to enjoy my property. It's not infringing upon other people's any more than it has to. If I have a piece of property and none of my neighbors say I can cross their property, I can't get off my property. So you need an easement just to walk between people's property to get off of your property. And so certain easements make sense if they're protecting my property rights to enjoy my property, but they don't make sense if I'm not disturbing anyone and someone is just trying to infringe on my enjoyment of my land.
These are clear thoughts from David Murata on property rights, and these are of man or of God. We'll get to all of that. And to your calls at 977-1070, as Luke stands by, there's a line open right now, and you can get in line. Comments, questions, challenges, we'd love to hear from you at 977-1070. The Shilling Show on WINA continues. It's The Shilling Show on WINA. Coming up in hour number two, Supervisor Ken Boyd on the Hour of Dumbler. Well, we'll have other things to talk about maybe, but the Dumbler situation in the news 24/7 on every news cycle. We're taking a little break from that in this hour as we continue our conversation with David Murata. He's online at muratahonmoney.com, where you can get some great information. Also the president of Murata Wealth Management. And if the name sounds familiar, you read him in the Sunday opinion section of the daily newspaper every single week. Greg's been waiting very patiently. We're talking about property rights today. And let us say hello to Greg. Hey, Greg, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, guys, how are you all? I'd say since the Civil War, you got the central government status, you know, such as Obama, want to take all our God-given rights, property, and wealth. And one of the examples that they slipped in was the Obamacare mandates, 2,600 pages of malarkey, the 3.8% tax on the sale of your house. Now, I don't know how that works. I don't know if you have a limitation. And then, you know, the local taxes are going up, which I don't believe in local real estate tax anyway, because of the mandates from the Fed with Medicaid and Medicare and all these things. The state has to kick in and help pay, and so they got to get it from somewhere, so they go up on real estate. And then there is such thing as common sense zoning, but, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I've lived in Alamo County, owned land since I was 14, and I really have never been able to enjoy my property the way I want to, and I'll just sign off and get a gist of what y'all think of what it said.
Greg, thanks very much. Let's get a response from David.
Yeah, it's interesting. The United States ranks on the Heritage Foundation's property rights 85 out of 100, which is actually very good. 85 out of 100 is much higher than the world average, which is 43.4 out of 100. Most places in the world, you don't have even a quarter of the property rights you have in the United States. But the Heritage Foundation does rank us not as well as other countries. In fact, there's 18 other countries that rank higher than us in property rights.
Wow.
And in their report, they even cited something that I've written about before, and that is the GM bailout. And their sentence basically said that the GM bailout negated the property rights of bondholders according to the rule of law, which is interesting because the as GM went into receivership, it should have been owned by the bondholders. Instead, the government stepped in and said, we will own it, and then we will give the ownership to the unions. And so this was, I mean, in the reelection campaign of Obama, this was a touted factor of didn't the GM bailout work? And if you put work in quotes, it worked in the sense that GM is still a company and that GM has still paid whatever the bailout was back. But they paid it back now, and the unions own it, and they paid it back to the government. But the bondholders got shafted in the whole deal. So if, you know, it's sort of like, well, if you have a failing business and I come in and I just confiscate the whole thing, and then I am able to turn the business around and run it again, is that a success or is that theft? And in terms of property rights, that's theft. The bondholder should. Now, full disclosure, I had a GM bond, so mm-hmm. I was particularly slighted by the whole thing. And not only that, but I owned stock in Toyota, and so I owned stock in a direct competitor that would have been better had the government not bailed out GM. And so the problem with property rights is you change the little guy can no longer compete against the big guy because the big guy can afford to sway government the way they want to, and that's what property rights do is it puts power in the hands of political persuasion. Rather than in the hands of market competition.
David Morata is our guest. We're talking about property rights. There's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. Luke standing by. Don't wait till the last minute. Comments on property rights or questions, 977-1070. You mentioned that there are almost 20 countries ahead of us in property rights. And I'm very curious, first of all, what countries are those, and in what ways are they ahead of the United States in property rights?
It's interesting. The regions of the world that have the best property rights are Canada and the United States, most of Europe, Australia, New Zealand. New Zealand actually has the best property rights, 95 out of 100 in the world. And so Europe and the United States and the developed countries, Australia, tend to do property rights as well as you can. And I include the United States in that, mm-hmm. even though we're not at the top. And we're not at the top primarily because of government intervention, government corruption. And property rights are hard to measure. So there's a lot of measurements that they try to use in that. They look at case laws. They look at what you can and can't do with property, and also what secures your rights and the ability of government to take property away, or regulations that curtail how you can use it. So it's a long mix of things. But most of the world, you don't have any property rights to speak of, and the government has a lot of sway over it. And therefore, there's very little use of the property because you will not get the fruits of your labor. Someone else will benefit from the fruits of your labor.
You know, we have people in the listening audience who are very concerned about what they would consider extreme property rights. But I think I'd like to spend just another moment on this, David Morata, because I think we should put a case study forward here. Maybe we could look at the top one or two countries that have the most property rights, and if that has been disastrous for those countries. In other words, do we have nuclear radiation dumps next to the grammar schools and so forth?
Yeah, New Zealand with the highest property rights is probably one of the most beautiful countries in the world. Everyone I've known who's gone there has said, the best place to visit in the world is mm-hmm. New Zealand. So if New Zealand, with its idyllic paradise in terms of the environment, can have also strong property rights, it's an indicator that that it can work. I read one attack on property rights, and if I can, I'm just going to read it. This is the attack. Either the law endorses land degradation by allowing it, as you propose, or it endorses a more conservative moral attitude by limiting owners to ecologically sound land uses. A choice must be made, and the majority should be the one to make it, not the autonomous landowner. In other words, for me to enjoy the morality of everyone in the world handling the world properly, I have to impose my 51% majority on you. It's interesting to me because I was able to change just a slight bit of this and realize that liberals would not be in favor of it. And let me read the slight bit mm-hmm. I changed. Either the law endorses killing fetuses by allowing it, as you propose, or it endorses a more conservative moral attitude by limiting pregnant women to humane practices. A choice must be made, and the majority should be the one to make it, not the autonomous individual. And yet, while liberals will want a woman's right to choose with her own body, even though it might be killing a fetus, killing a person, they don't want a property owner to have the same ability to choose for his property what he would do. Most of the property owners I know believe in more ecologically sound practices than the government requires because of the requirements they've put on, for example, food production.
Mm-hmm.
Their requirements of food production have created a food industry, whereas more ecologically sound practices are actually against the law because they don't use enough disinfectants and pesticides and things like that. And so it's difficult to know, when the government bans raw milk. Those aren't really extreme practices. These are very unextreme practices, which may actually be have better health benefits.
David Marotta is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. You know, one of the things that struck me about the first passage that you read was, you know, if we had all of this regulation beforehand, we would be living essentially in the Stone Age right now because nothing ever would have happened. And yet these people who are putting out these sorts of complaints, they're enjoying the benefit of everything that came before them, of the property rights foundation of this country, that if it wasn't here, you would be in a country like Albania or some other backward place that never had any development. It's the same thing if we just look around Charlottesville. Gosh, if we would have put the kibosh on things as soon as Jefferson died, none of us would be living here. We'd have nothing but trees.
It's true. Most of the infringements on property rights stem from the belief that something is so morally right that we must impose this behavior on others. We must force them to value what we value. And really, down that path lies what I would mm-hmm. call auto-theocracy, and that is I'm going to make my own opinions God. and an auto-theocratic rule would be a 51% majority is going to say, look, my beliefs need to be imposed upon everyone, and everyone needs to do exactly what I think is right. And that's just not freedom. Freedom requires us to allow people to do things that we might think are wrong, in the idea that we live in a moral universe, and if they're really wrong, the death that comes from it will be up on themselves. And so long as it's not infringing upon the property rights of others, that's the place where I would draw the line is, obviously pollution is not okay because I'm downstream from you. And there's a something there which is a right of mine to enjoy the clean water that flows onto my land. And there's all kinds of English common law to try to both preserve property rights and yet maintain those kinds of balances for land use or water use.
Before we go to the break, David Marotta, and there's a line open at 977-1070, we have a challenge from Ken the Democrat, who writes into us often, and we're glad he's listening. He says, does Mr. Marotta acknowledge that great wealth concentrated in the hands of a relative few restricts the economic liberty of many? Does Mr. Marotta find the term the Gilded Age to be pejorative?
Yeah, great wealth in the hands of a few. So let me just sort of take that to its natural conclusion. Let's say that I'm incredibly productive, and my motive for being incredibly productive is to leave something to my children. If I leave it to my children and you take it away from my children, I have no incentive to be incredibly productive. Every parent I know is trying to give their children a as good a life as possible. Now, the best parents know that to give their children as good a life as possible, you have to instill in them a work ethic. And so I understand that just giving them things is not the right way to do it, but giving them opportunities is. And most people who want equal outcomes also want somehow equal opportunities, and yet that's a vicious cycle you'll never get. There are some parents who are not very good parents. They're addicted to drugs. They will never give their children what a loving parent will give their child, and that child will grow up in a situation which is not as good. But there's no such thing as equal opportunity. Equal opportunity is just unequal. Unequal opportunity is just unequal outcomes from a prior generation or a prior decision. And that's the difficulty that we face. Now, are there people who worry about children who do not have loving parents? Yes, there are. Do those people voluntarily try to provide better situation for kids who are growing up impoverished? Yes, they do. And that is the right incentive. But there's no charity in stealing from someone else to give to charity. That's not charity.
It's not, and yet we hear politicians, including the former mayor David Brown here, referring to these as contributions. That's certainly a misuse at the very best. David Marotta is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. Ken the Democrat, thanks for your challenge. And the Shilling Show will continue the final segment with David Marotta right after this. Open phones coming up at the top of hour number two on The Shilling Show. Right now, our final segment with David Murata, Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com, and with you at 977-1070. And thanks for taking advantage of the opportunity. Chris, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Thank you, Rob. David, it's good to hear you talking on the radio. I agree with what you've been saying, particularly when it comes to families and equal opportunity and the idea that, you know, some kids are going to get what they need to be successful in life, and some kids, unfortunately, are not. And what bothers me about liberals and progressives is that somehow they want to try to equalize those situations in people's families when it's really none of their business at all. And with Ken the Democrat, I'm finding out, David, that we need to tell these people that their thinking is wrong and that they're misled. It's not enough to explain to them our views. We have to get in their face, and we have to tell them that they're wrong. And Ken the Democrat doesn't seem to realize that in our culture and in our way of marketing, you can become a millionaire through your ideas, and then 5 years later, you can lose your millions because the market changes and you have not adapted to keep your wealth. And he refuses to bring that up, I guess, because he thinks like a Marxist, which is also the wrong way to think if you want to live in America. And with that, I'll just hang up. Thanks.
Okay, let's get a response.
Yeah, Chris is exactly right. America has probably one of the most mobile societies. I've seen the statistics for being in the bottom 20% of income and the next year what different brackets you can be in by percentages. And we have the ability to go from the bottom bracket to the top bracket to the second to top bracket to the third to the top bracket to the top bracket down to the fourth bracket. I mean, it's very mobile in terms of income and production, certainly. He's also right in that Ken wanted to have some wealth equalization. And I would say, Ken, how would you like to have all of your wealth taken away from you and sent overseas to the starving people who are living on $2 a day in India? Would that be okay with you? Is there a morality? Because he has incredibly excessive wealth compared to most of the world. But he has that because he lives in a country that has such freedoms and property rights that we have. That's one of the indicators of property rights. The more you emphasize property rights, the higher your gross domestic product per person. And so Ken, even though he doesn't consider himself among the most wealthy in America, he is among the most wealthy in the world because there are the most wealthy in America because of property rights. And so he's trying to actually he's lusting after steak for the cash cow that feeds him every day. And if he kills that cash cow and makes steak out of it, he'll eat one day and then that'll be the end of it.
You know, it's interesting because he has followed up with another question, and I think this is really critical, and maybe we'll go out on this one. He says, why is it stealing to take from the children of generations of good parents to give economic opportunity to children of generations of bad ones? I think this may just be the crux of the issue here. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, and certainly if property rights are just a creation of law, then the majority, any majority, have the right to exercise their sovereign authority to regulate, restrict, or even eliminate the property rights of a minority and take it away from them. I think the point is it is stealing because it is the parents' labor, and it is theirs to do with what they want. And if the parents want to provide for their children, who is Ken to get in the way of a parent providing for their children? That, to me, seems to me as a basic fundamental right. And if I labor hard and I give it to someone else, that's my sovereign right because it's my labor. And if I have to labor hard to give it to Ken's children, that is stealing and that is slavery because he's now enslaved my labor. Why doesn't Ken labor hard for my children? Why doesn't Ken labor hard and give it to my children? Or why doesn't Ken labor hard and give it to the children in India who are living off $2 a day? And if Ken does that freely, that's great. That's charity. But if I take all of Ken's labor and give it to the children in India, there is no virtue in that on my part. And there's no virtue in that on Ken's part because it's not a freely given choice. And we are not slaves. I mean, it's based on the principle that we're not slaves and we own the right to do with our labor what we want.
And that's a concept that has really been lost. And what troubles me a lot about, you know, this concept of let's take from one and give to the other is who's deciding? You know, who is the panel that makes the decision that you're on one side or the other of the line? And what this ultimately leads to is pillaging and violence, because people start to think, well, gosh, I'm not sure I agree with that panel. And that guy over there, he's got a 4-bedroom house and he's living in there with maybe just his wife, one other person. I want that house and it belongs to me because I have 4 kids and I'm living in a shack somewhere. So that's all of a sudden mine. And so all of this concept, if you don't respect it on the front end, it ultimately leads to people taking things into their own hands. And we've seen that throughout history.
It reminds me of the latest Batman movie in which the masses have taken over Gotham City and Catwoman and someone else are in some broken house. And Catwoman says, this used to be someone's house, as they've smashed it and trashed it. Mm-hmm. And the other woman says, now it's everybody's house. and yet that's what happens with property rights.
And this is, let's just go out quickly with a comment from Brandon Collins, who listens to the program. We're glad he does, a local socialist, when he was talking about this issue.
I don't see any problem with raising the tax rate. I think if there was ever a time that this council ought to consider even a small, tiny increase, it would be now. When the country is falling apart, when our economic situation is devastating, not just the typical folks who get devastated by this economy, but also the middle class.
And the thought is that if we just keep raising taxes and taking property and property rights away from people, because that's what that is, that we're going to fix everything.
Yeah, you asked me at the start of the show why I picked this. And although the Heritage Foundation still has an 85% freedom ranking, the rhetoric has changed. And that frightens me. The rhetoric is now, what's wrong with stealing other people's money to mm-hmm. give it to other people's children?
It is frightening, and especially as we look at generations ahead of us. David Morata is always a tremendous program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
MorataOnMoney.com. And when we return on the Shilling Show, we'll have some time for open phones. I may have to give Mark Warner a little spanking, and Ann Malik included, if I have some time. Oh, that's always fun. Anyway, 977-1070 is the phone number. Ken Boyd will be here in studio with us on Chris Dumler, and maybe we'll get to a couple of other things. But I've got a lot of questions I want to talk to Ken about on that issue, and it's not going away, and it's time for Chris Dumler to resign. Hey, stay with us. The Shilling Show back.